that the independent voice of KPFT will be preserved for generations to come. Name KPFT as a beneficiary in your will today. This is KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Coming up next is that show about that stuff.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to tonight's post DEF CON edition of Technology Bites.
We're not in Vegas anymore?
What? Where? What?
Where are we?
Two.
Roll call.
Present.
Four, what? Three, two, one.
Oh, God. Welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Ziggy Stardust.
Spiders from Mars. And Lee Hutchinson is taking the night off.
Again.
Because he was really exhausted from not going to TechCon. Yeah.
It was awesome. I accidentally reverse sorted. I wanted to bring it up, so I did a little search for. No, I didn't even search for Lee. I just reverse sorted my mail. And then at the very end of my mail was another thing from Lee saying, hey, I'm not going to make it tonight. Alpha and the Omega.
Yeah, so we're back. Oh, man.
Mostly back.
That was fun.
Yeah, I'm pretty, I'm still pretty physically exhausted.
Well, there were a lot of hackers. A lot of hackers.
There's a lot of ground to cover.
Yes, lots of walking.
It seemed, I will say this year seemed a little more haphazard than previous cons.
I think in the back it ran better. But I think, especially on Thursday.
Yeah.
Because of where they put, I don't know where it was last year, but there were way more people on there on Thursday. And so, yeah, like DEF CON 101, those lines were out of control.
I think people had just given up the will to go to talks by Sunday, and it just cleared out.
I think it on the Thursday one, I was Thursday or Friday, at some point somebody said that the escalator from ground, the casino ground, to DEFCON 101 started smoking and smelt like burning.
Somebody hacked it.
So I think it got overloaded with all the people.
Do you hear? I hear echo. I wonder if Pete has the speaker on or if there's something going on. Echo.
Let's see, I can turn it down a little.
All right.
The better?
I left Audition on so he can hear himself.
That's good.
That's better.
All right, yeah.
Because it doesn't provide, it doesn't cause feedback like the engineer said it would.
Ha ha.
Yeah, it would.
All right, well, we're glad you could tune in. Welcome to the show. Visit us online at geekradio.com for all the information you need to know about the program. You can use the contact form there if you care to send in a question or comments during the show. You can call, but the phone will just ring and ring. But if you send a message via the website, we might actually answer it on the air. If we can get to it, certainly will be, you know, worth a shot.
We'll try.
And you can hang out with us on IRC, irc.cuckoo.com, in the channel Tech Bytes. And, wow, I still haven't really processed this last weekend. I already booked my room, though, for next year. So that says something. We'll see. We'll see. So Flicked was actually employed by DEF CON this year.
I hope you got paid as much as you do here.
More.
Whoa.
Wow. Wow. Oh, you got it. They're recruiting.
Well, I feel like I'm walking into a server room.
Power down, like the Cyber Grand loud, Challenge, Pete.
Loud whirring sound. So, yeah. I got. So, part of my room was comped. If I would have split it with another worker, volunteer, then. The entire room would have been comp for the whole convention. But I didn't have to pay to get in, so I got my badge free, and I got a free shirt. I was supposed to get two, but I had to give one up because they were short. Let's see what else. I got per diem.
That's good.
DEFCON 24 poker chips.
Yeah, I saw those going around, which actually
were $5 a piece.
Saved you a lot of money considering, you know, like a Mountain Dew is $8 or what have you.
Yeah, you know the funny thing about this?
$1.
The funny thing about those is they won't give you change.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, so
it's been over the amount.
So either you had to you either had to add some cash in or I always worked it out so that it was exactly $5 or exactly $10. So I would get something now I got to find something for $2.
Oh,
I guess I'll get a granola bar.
So they were worth money. It wasn't worth this is a drink. This
no,
is
they were
a
worth no, $5.
$5
oh, okay. Oh, so you guys got, okay. So you were still having to do the tax, the Vegas tax like everyone else.
Well, the idea is you could defray your cost by $5 if it was under 10. Spend your own money unless it got to be $10 and you could use.
That's what
chips.
I did. So I would add stuff onto it until it got to 10.
Did they charge you less for food? Because when I first went up there was some confusion. And I wasn't even wearing a red shirt, but there was confusion. I think it was I got there when someone first came on the first shift, and there was confusion as to what to charge me because she didn't understand what I was.
Oh.
She was just confused, but it sounded
no,
like there might have been
as far
pricing.
As I know, there was no different pricing. However, I found out on Saturday, so 3 days in, I found out that Goons got a free drink.
Oh, that's what it was, because the drink thing. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway.
So I hadn't known that.
So for lack of context, DEF CON, biggest hacker convention in the U.S., I'm sure. I don't think anyone else is getting upwards of 22,000.
Well, and it grew a lot, yeah. So it was over 22,000 this year.
Really? 22,000?
They said they had 20,000 human badges, 22,000 lanyards. And they ran out of lanyards.
Yeah, so there were over 22,000 people.
They ran out of badges.
Yeah, I even saw, this is really bad, I saw Goons with paper badges. So yep. The big deal is they give out electronic hardware badges. Goons always have badges. It's kind of a prestigious kind of thing. And for those guys to have paper badges, wow.
Yeah, there were red paper Goon badges.
How did people feel about that on the Goon side?
I never asked. I'm assuming they were probies or first years would be my guess, because that's probably what would happen.
Hello.
How is he serve us up?
And now in the data center again. Live from the data center.
Well, I muted so that I wouldn't be doing that all the time. So it was the most massive Mr. Robot cosplay ever this time.
I saw a couple of Mr. Moneybag shirts, maybe one or two masks, but not nearly as much Mr. Robot stuff.
I didn't see any masks, but I saw a fair number of F Society.
Two of the technical people from the show had a panel.
Yeah, they did a panel.
I missed that. Was that a Sky Talk or what was that?
No, it was a regular panel. It wasn't track one because that's the one I ran, and it wasn't that I helped run, and it wasn't in mine, so it wasn't track one. It was either track two or three, but yeah, it was I forgot his name now. The main guy who does the
that sounds like the opening of the Beastie Boys. Ill Communication. Flute Loop.
The main guy that runs the tech consultant for Mr. Robot.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah.
And another guy that also consults on it, and then I think Dark Tangent might have been on it, and then two or three security guys.
Was it what was that person's name? Core something, maybe? Was it an odd? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Adana?
Yeah.
Okay.
Adana. See, I didn't get to see that. I didn't get to see much. I pretty much only saw what was going on in track one. That's about the only stuff I saw. But there were some cool talks in track one. I saw the one by Chris Rock, the Australian guy that had a talk about how to overthrow the government.
I saw that, although I saw it from the hotel room, BedCon.
Oh, okay.
Kind of, but that was the audio also was a little bit, they didn't quite iron out the audio in the video.
See, that was another thing. They were really excited about DCTV this year because they had upgraded to 1080p,
mm-hmm.
right? They upgraded to high def.
But how are they moving?
This is going to be awesome.
How are they moving it? Hardwired, or did they like digitize it and put over a network?
They did it over the network, I think, and
which
the
network
got
would
overloaded.
That be? The world's like.
Well, probably no. They probably put it on the
separate.
I don't know if it's on a completely separate network, but I think that probably at least on a different VLAN, you know, or something. I think it was separated, but I think it was still part of the same fabric, you know. So when the switch got overloaded, it got affected too. I don't know for sure. I didn't ask anybody. But I do know in closing ceremonies, the guy talked about that's what happened. And so they had to modify some stuff and change their encoding to try to get it good enough to be able to push it into the systems for the rooms.
I see.
Yes. So we'll have to bring out some stuff for the next Geek Gathering.
Yes.
And then do more DEF CON-ing and reminiscing.
Well, the good
there.
Thing is this year, well, not this year, next year, DEF CON is not, it's at the end of the month, so it won't be interfering with the Geek Gathering. Unless the first Friday somehow falls on the 28th, which I suppose is possible.
You never know. It'll be a really long week.
Weird, weird time shift. It's like when I was in Newfoundland and the time difference was 2.5 hours. 2.5 hours. What the hell? You'd be watching TV. Okay, coming up at the top of the hour, but it's 6:30. All right, well, let's move on to other things. I'm going to go ahead and hand it off to Peter Hughes in San Antonio with the Technology Bytes Info Shot. So take it away, Info Shot.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
Well, if you were hoping that the FCC was going to be able to protect municipal broadband and that would survive telecom's attempts to destroy it, there's bad news. A federal appeals court has shot down an FCC order that preempted the laws banning city-run internet access in North Carolina and Tennessee. Of course, when they put that order in, both states filed lawsuits. According to the decision, the commission was overriding states' rights without legal authority. While the FCC interpreted a clause in the Telecommunications Act that it must, quote, encourage, unquote, a timely rollout of broadband as giving it permission to step in, the court sees it as insisting that cities must expand their internet options. There has to be a clearer mandate, the judges say. To no one's surprise, the FCC is not happy about the ruling. It's still looking over the decision. Chairman Tom Wheeler already believes the lost appeal will, quote, halt the promise of jobs, investment, and opportunity, unquote, that municipal broadband offers. It doesn't eliminate city broadband by any stretch, but at least sets some or it lets some states limit attempted rollouts. And unfortunately, that's a win for incumbent internet providers and would hurt competition. So here's let's just cut to the chase. This is where Comcast and big providers with monopolies keep municipals from competing with them. And so, of course, what does that really mean? That means that your representative, if they're passing laws in you know, if the state you're listening to this in, like North Carolina, that means that they want to put money in those people's pockets, in particular internet service providers' pockets, and they don't really give a crap about what kind of internet speeds you get, how much you pay for them, and if there's coverage over the whole area. I would say that if you want to see what happens when there's competition, just go look at what happens when Google Fiber comes into an area and look at the pricing, the speed, and the availability of good broadband. And I think you'd learn a big lesson. So, you know, it's too bad. I think that obviously the courts didn't say that the FCC can do nothing, but that they have to be clear. It has to be a clearer mandate. So I have a feeling that they will be going back to the drawing board and figuring out how to rework it so that perhaps municipal broadband, because so far in the majority of places that have done it, it has been successful. So you can look it up in Tennessee. I believe it's Chattanooga, and then parts of North Carolina where it's been done. It's been a successful thing. So, of course, it's a lot cheaper to pay a few lobbyists and get some laws to shut that down than it is to just friggin' compete. So, bad news for the start of the show. But, at least you know about it, and maybe something will change in the future. This one's an interesting one. Adobe Flash Player, you know, as much as it has been a, like, complete source of holes in security for many browsers for many years, and is a problem. Google is going to make some changes about Flash, and not so much about the part that you see. One of the things that this is from the Chrome blog, and they're posted by Anthony LaForge, who is the curator of Flash in Google Chrome. It's like, boy, talk about the most thankless, obscure job. He says that, that while on the surface you don't see Flash so much, that more than 90% of Flash on the web loads behind the scenes to support stuff like page analytics. And that this kind of Flash slows you down. So starting this September, Chrome 53 is going to begin blocking it. HTML5 is much lighter and faster, and publishers are switching over to speed up page loading and save you more battery life. You should see an improvement in responsiveness and efficiency for many sites. He goes on to say, this is similar to a change made last September when some Flash content became click to play with Chrome 42. It's had an immediate positive impact for our users by improving page load time and saving battery power. In December, Chrome 55 will make HTML5 the default experience except for sites which only support Flash. For those, you'll be prompted to enable Flash when you first visit the site, so you get to choose. Aside from that, the only change you'll notice is a safer and more power-efficient browsing experience. I guess that's kind of the money quote. And then, of course, they do the make nice at the end. We continue to work closely with Adobe to ensure that your web experience is as fast and secure as possible and to help the web transition to HTML5, which clearly that's a Flash-free future that they're trying to do. Another Google doing stuff to help us and make the world a better place. Apparently, they're going to send you new warnings when you're getting sketchy emails. That was in another blog post today. It's meant to help you decide whether you really want to open an email and click on any of the attachments or links inside. Those are tasks many of us do countless times each day, but they also put you at risk of downloading bad stuff onto your computer or giving someone untrustworthy access to your login information. Gmail already features some warning messages, but the new alerts detailed Wednesday will help in two specific situations. They'll tell you if you get an email with a link to a website known for hosting malicious software, That's a good one. Or if Gmail can't authenticate that the email sender is who they say they are. So that should be nice. It doesn't mean that emails are definitely sent by bad guys trying to own your computer, but it does give you more information. And I think probably the people who need it are going to benefit. The ones who need it the most are going to be the ones who benefit the most from it, because they're the ones who wouldn't have thought about, you know, double-clicking that PDF or that Excel file with that really important memo that sounds like it's from somebody important trying to get in touch with them. And then now the flaws. Well, I guess we've had the flaws part so far just about in every story, but this one is interesting. A flaw in the transmission control protocol, the TCP in TCP/IP, used by Linux since late 2012, poses a serious threat to internet users, whether or not they use Linux directly. It's finding from a research study that's scheduled to be presented Wednesday, but I didn't have any info on it by before showtime, at the Usenix Security Symposium in Austin, Texas. The TCP weakness, identified by researchers from the University of California at Riverside, enables attackers to hijack users' internet communications completely remotely. It could be used to launch targeted attacks that track users' online activity, forcibly terminate a communication, hijack a conversation between hosts, or degrade the privacy guarantee of anonymity networks such as Tor, the researchers said. Since Linux runs behind the scenes on a lot of internet servers, Android phones, and a range of other devices, a lot of users may be affected. You know, essentially, Linux and other operating systems use TCP to package and send data being transferred from one place to another. So when you two people communicate by email, for example, TCP assembles the message into a series of data packets that are transmitted, received, then reassembled back into the original message. Those packets are identified by unique sequence numbers that could be handy for attackers, but typically there are too many possibilities to make those numbers guessable. Under ordinary circumstances, the subtle flaw uses something called side channels in the Linux software to make it possible for attackers to infer the sequence numbers associated with a particular connection by using no more information than the IP addresses of the communicating parties. So if you know who they are, apparently you have a way that you can do it. So given any two arbitrary machines on the internet, a remote blind attacker can track online activity, terminate connections, and inject false material into their communications. Even encrypted HTTPS connections, which are immune to data injection, could be forcibly terminated. Attackers could also undermine Tor by forcing connections to route through certain relays where they could be, you know, watched, etc. So the Linux community has been alerted to the vulnerability, and the next version of Linux is already patched. In the meantime, Ziyun Qian, an assistant professor of computer science at UCR, recommends a temporary patch for both client and server hosts. And you can find that if you need to search it out. So so there's that. And then here's one that's a more limited population, but it shows a larger problem. You know, the this one is a vulnerability, I guess you'd call it, as part of the Internet of Things. They found a security flaw in an Internet-connected vibrator. Stanford Innovation offers in its WeVibe 4 Plus, which pairs with a smartphone via Bluetooth and can be controlled by a partner near or far. Apparently, two security researchers that go by the names Follower and Goldfisk found flaws in the software that controls the device. It could potentially let a hacker take over the device while it's in use. At least right now, it's only theoretical. The thing that's more concerning, actually, is the device's use of personal data. The company that makes it collects information on the temperature of the device and the intensity at which it's vibrating in real time. And so that seems like that's kind of personal information, very personal information. Apparently they do, the company, their spokesperson, first off said the company will fix the software vulnerability. which he said a hacker would need to be nearby to exploit. So that may be good news if that's correct. But also, they said the company will be clarifying its terms and conditions and will let users opt out of sending data about using the device. You know, basically this will play out over and over again on the Internet of Things on devices, so that, you know, because every time, you know, this is part of a follower in Goldfisk said that they want to challenge the idea that terms and conditions on internet connected devices should be used by companies as a cover for collecting as much information as possible, especially when it comes to things that are of a, I guess, more personal nature. So this, I would put this under, this is sort of good guy hackery to make a point that all of us can benefit from, even if we're not consumers of that particular product. And that's the news, if you feel safe.
All right.
So at DEF CON, do you learn new things, and is that a big part of it, or is it more just the experience of being around all of this at the same time? Or if somebody has never gone, what's the biggest appeal that,
well, there's
that you're
two
seeing?
There's two ways to do DEF CON. There's one, just going for the social interaction, you know, chilling during the day, seeing people, hanging around, and then going out at night and really being irresponsible. And then there's the, like, you know, get up early, get in line, follow the tracks, and go to the talks and learn as much as you possibly can.
There are actually contests too, so you can, you know, dedicate your entire time to a contest, I suppose. And then they tried to do workshops this year, which they'd done in the past.
They did do workshops.
Yeah.
But they booked up really fast.
Yeah, I did like a car hacking workshop at DEF CON a handful of years ago, and it was pretty easy to get into. We went there, you know, maybe a few people didn't make it into the class, but this time it was just a massive number of people that wanted to do the workshops with very, very few spaces to do it. So yep. It just kind of turned into pandemonium. But there's a lot of different things you
can
do.
So they're supposed to grow that next year, probably.
Some of the most worthwhile stuff I did, and it's kind of like I made promises not to talk about certain things, but the way that it worked, there were a lot of underground talks where you were taken down into a room, all electronic devices off, everything shut down. If anything beeps, if anything goes off, you're immediately escorted out of the room. No wireless mics, no wireless anything. And then even if someone had an emergency, had to leave, they would shut down the talk, block the projectors, clear the doors, security would let you out of the room, and then they would maybe resume the talk. And if the speakers got uncomfortable, they would totally shut down the talks. So that was kind of interesting. That's the first time it felt like very, very, you know, quote underground and very, you know, like things that you would not want to go out to be on Twitter or not want to be in the media, things you wouldn't want talked about on radio. But that was kind of the cooler stuff. This was actually
B-Sides or DEF CON?
This was B-Sides. Okay. This was a little bit before. So B-Sides, and not to, don't go to B-Sides. Don't make B-Sides big. But a lot of the people that do B-Sides then go on to DEF CON. And a lot of the speakers and a lot of the main people are kind of at both. But that was really cool. So I think I got a little bit more out of that. Once I got to DEF CON, it was definitely, you know, we talked about the same things, but it was not in such a formal fashion. It was much more, you know, whispering
at bars. It's funny to call DEF CON. It's funny to call DEF CON formal.
Yeah. Actually, DEF CON's a little, yeah.
Well, I didn't get to make it to the demonstration, but I heard about it. DARPA was there.
Oh, that was really cool. Yeah, so DARPA, the Grand Challenge, was there, and I didn't realize they spent this much money on it. They spent like $70 million around what they were doing at DEF CON. What they did was, there's always been, you know, capture the flag kind of games at DEF CON. It's kind of prestigious.
Most prestigious contest.
Yeah, people start qualifying for this contest all over. So more or less, it's to boil it down, capture the flag is, you have a server. Let's just make some stuff up. Like, you've got a Linux server that has some basic services up there, maybe like, you know, like FTP and SSH and HTTPS, and maybe you're holding up a MySQL server and all this other stuff. And what you've got to do is, you've got to, through firewalls and software hardening and patches, keep your services up while attacking other servers, trying to bring their services and their firewalls and their everything, their machine down to a halt, trying to get as many exploits as you can. So it's kind of like a big slugfest. Everyone just kind of, you know, pulls up the jerseys hockey style and just starts swinging. That's kind of how it is. So the issue with that is that it's usually played in teams from, you know, 8 to 12 people, but they move as fast as hackers can launch scripts and things like that. But what they did with the DARPA Grand Challenge is they actually moved that away from actual hackers launching those scripts in real time to the hackers programmed supercomputers, like legitimate supercomputers, that would then go in, scan the vector, and they were even doing like wireless. They were looking and attacking wireless software. When you went in this, DARPA had a sign up that says, look, you're entering more or less an electronic warfare zone. If you do not want your wireless devices scanned, shut them off now if you come in here, because they were scanning everything. The entire spectrum was kind of at war. So you would see these graphical representations of, you know, them launching attacks across the way at each other. And it was just, it was more bits and more packets, more things that you, a human could possibly do. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's like before we were going like pew, pew, pew at the other servers, and now more or less they've got like an 18 Warthog with, you know, the, just a gun built around a plane.
The best quote was somebody tweeted, I think I just witnessed Skynet being born.
Yeah, there was a big, I think the first prize was at $5 million was first prize, and $3 million, or was $3 million first prize? It was a lot of prize money.
Yeah, I don't remember what the awards amount was.
And I'll try and get some, I'll definitely get some pictures of the servers and stuff like that out there on our Facebook page.
It was
page.
Very pretty. They spent some money making it look nice.
It was really cool. And actually, so this was cool. So they actually had like, and I don't watch a lot of sports, but it seemed like very much like a Monday Night Football kind of setup with announcers. And there was one guy that really knew what was going on. You could tell he had like some lip piercings and a weird kind of like, you know, Asian, feudal kind of haircut.
He was the guy that used to run the CTF.
Oh, nice. Okay. So that makes sense. And then I think what they did was DARPA said like, hey, let's get like a paid personality to come in that sounds kind of sports-like, and let's give him a teleprompter to read from. And he went off script a couple times at one point.
But he had a PhD.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
oh,
he had a science PhD.
He should not have called a room full of hackers nerds, because he said, yeah, it's something like an IP address or whatever you nerds like. And it's like, he just alienated the entire room.
No, he empowered the entire room.
It was kind of derogatory. It was like the other guy was really getting it, and he was just kind of making nerd jokes. It was kind of like, at least when I was in there, I don't know.
Well, anyway,
I just went in for the very.
It was awesome, though.
I went in for like the last hour, so I only saw the like last five or six rounds. I only saw like the last five or six rounds of the contest, and then the ending, and then they said who that they thought the top three teams were. Although in the end they said we won't announce the awards until the next day, mm-hmm. and I guess they found something that discounted the person who had been listed as third, and so they dropped, and the person that was in fourth ended up third.
We say person, we mean supercomputer. Well, and this is kind of cool,
the
too.
Team.
So the winner of the challenge, actually, I think Dark Tangent, the main organizer of DEF CON, awarded DEF CON's highest honor, which is just a quote-unquote black badge. It's like, you know, everyone else gets different color badges that say Uber badge, and they gave it to the supercomputer. And actually, the supercomputer is on its way to the Smithsonian. And fingers crossed, the DEF CON Black Badge might be on its way there, too.
Well, and it also, they asked the team that did it, when they were done, like, we're giving you the option to join the human CTF. And so the supercomputer played in the regular DEF CON human CTF.
How did it do?
I don't think it did that well.
Oh.
I don't know, though. So the problem is that they said that the computers are still at the point where they basically don't have the complexity of thought that humans have, right? They're, like, mm-hmm. very simplistic. So when they gave them all the possible exploits, a lot of them were pretty easy, like older vulnerabilities that are well known. But they kind of stepped it up to create a range because they wanted to see how much these people could get out of the computers. And so there were a couple of things they said they were pretty surprised by.
They found some new exploits, some unknown
exploits.
Well,
they found
one or two.
One of them found an unknown exploit in one of the binaries that had a known exploit, which it also found. But one of them found the control adder exploit was from like 5 or 6 years ago, mm-hmm. which they were surprised. Like they didn't think one of them was going to find that and be able to use it. So they were like, you know, it did show them that they were able to program them in a little more advanced than that they kind of thought, but they weren't really sure where it would fall.
And really, if you kind of liken this to the days of, you know, early computer chess, this is kind of where they liken that too. I think that was, you know, part of the talk when they came on and they said, hey, you know, this is where we see it. This is kind of a historical date, but also know that this is just the birth of it. You know, so that whole Skynet thing is a little bit relevant, I think.
Well, you know, so you have things like that. There are great demonstrations of very interesting tech and very interesting ways to exploit tech. And there's the vendor floor where a lot of companies that are involved in either making hardware, making software, represent themselves there, and you can go learn about what they're doing. That's where I found the Pony Express, where you found pineapple devices,
lock picks,
and that kind of thing.
T-shirts, all kinds of stuff, Wi-Fi gear.
And then there's a number of villages. I mean, so if you just want to wander around and go look at people or participate in different kinds of hacking, there's a lock picking village.
There's a lot of, there's like 8 villages now.
There's a hardware village. There's a wireless
social
village.
Social engineering village.
Yeah, one of the things I find most, that I always stop into when I go there, is the social engineering demonstration, where they actually have a soundproof booth with someone in there, and the contest is to see how much information they can. They call real companies. They'll call AT&T. They'll call, you know, Chevron or whatever, and they'll start extracting information from whoever will answer the phone, and you can hear it. They play it out on the speakers to the audience, but the audience can react to it however they want because the person's in a booth, so the person on the phone won't hear that they're being listened to.
This year they turned it around a little bit, because in the past, that you know, you could come up and you can say, like, hey, I'm CIO of this company. I give you permission to call my employees and put them through their paces. And more or less, it's like it's penetration testing on the soft side, on the human side. This year, at least when I was in there, a handful of them, they called security companies, like information security, security companies that should know better, that are in charge of doing pen testing and in charge of doing social engineering and all this. And they didn't do all that well. I think the main guy that won it, he actually, in like the first two calls, there were a number of things that you're supposed to try and get out of the caller. And maybe this guy was just a genius when it came to social engineering, but two security companies on both calls, he got every single thing he was supposed to get in the first call on the first try in one call. It was wow. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, so there's that. Then there's, you know, I stopped in on for the talk in the Wi-Fi hacking village, where they're talking about, you know, talking to satellites. And
yeah, and there were a contest even in there where you could do like fox hunting. So they would have wireless signals, everything from like Bluetooth to Wi-Fi to ham stuff, and you'd have to like wander the halls and try and find where they put it somewhere in the con.
Right, and the hardware hacking villages where people are, you know, actually putting together circuit boards and creating things.
Internet of Things village had, they brought in just about every Internet of Thing device they could find, from Alexa to drones to cameras to smart TVs to a Brita water filter. This is great. I didn't know there was a Internet of Things Brita water filter, but it's connected to where it can tell you like how many more times you can use the filter before the filter needs changing.
Right.
So, and you can actually log in and you could have access to all these different devices, and you could just try and look for exploits or just interact with them or see what was going on. And they had contests on that too. So just breaking things, you know, just come on, sit down, break some hardware.
So yeah, there's all kinds of stuff like that that you can do. And then of course,
and there's even stuff for the kids now.
Children's hacking stuff.
Roots.
Oh yeah. DEF CON Roots.
And, then there's the evenings, which are
not so much for the kids.
Not so much for the kids. It was 80s music night on Saturday night. What?
Oh, no, this was cool. Did you see the giveaway by Information Society?
No.
Which was kind of neat. So I wish I, so my, the entire weekend, I dumped a lot of stuff on my phone. I created a second account in a weird way, put some stuff on there. And I was constantly out of space. But apparently Information Society, which is the band that did like, you know, Pure Energy and a couple of other songs, really big in the 80s, they had tried to get out an album, but they got sued. Not by Disney, because they did have Disney music on there, but by, and I forget what band it was, but by another recording company that had a band sample on there. So this thing never got released. And so they made like 2 or 3 pressings of it. It never went anywhere. And it was still in the original Ziploc baggie with the liner notes handwritten, with everything ready to go press, but it was never released. So they argued this was possibly one of the rarest things they've ever had. They were going to give it away to the first person that emailed them with the correct answer to a quiz or to something. And what he did was he actually put on like some kind of a drum board synthesizer. He played out DTMF tones for maybe a good 45 seconds and then put his real email address out there in front of DEF CON to say like, hey, mail me in the answers. And of course, the first email he gets was, I can't believe you put out your real email address in front of, you know, DEF CON, blah, blah, blah. But it was pretty awesome. So he would read responses up on stage as they were coming in. And no one had gotten it right so far. But I tried to record it, but I didn't get the recording going in time. And then I ran out of memory. So...
Did one of the first answers he got was 42.
Yes, yes.
And then somebody, the next one was, I love you. And then at one point he got one, and he was like, well, I won't say exactly what he said,
yeah,
but he said,
attachment.
I'm not going to open an attachment on this Android device.
Did anybody see Berlin?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
it was all right.
Yeah. She was still... good.
All right.
Her vocals were really, like, good. Information Society guy?
Pure energy.
Maybe not the vocals so much.
Right. Visuals were cool, though. They did a lot of cool Star Trek visuals and a lot of neat stuff.
He was also
like that.
He was also kind of, like, arrogant.
And he was kind of hackery.
And
he kinda,
cocky.
Yeah.
And it felt like he was a talent, dude. He was jaded by the fact that they had maintained success through all these albums that they kept releasing.
See, that's really exciting to know they had kept releasing albums.
And that's why he's pissed.
Yeah.
I didn't see Richard, though. Richard Head.
I missed him, too. Yeah.
I walked by while he was playing once.
Richard Cheese?
Richard
what was
Cheese,
it?
Yeah.
And Lounge Against the Machine.
Yeah, I missed that.
Pure energy.
Keep doing that. That's awesome.
So, that you know, you can go there with any number of different tactics to enjoy the con and, you know.
Probably not commit to your plan, probably. What you plan on doing probably won't happen.
I will say this. If you're going to DEF CON, don't hitch your wagon to Barrett.
Aha.
Pure energy.
Cynthia came in and said something fairly awesome.
Yeah.
And a note she wrote to you.
Oh, yes, she did. That was funny.
It's a wise woman you married.
So every time I travel without Cynthia, she puts a note in my baggage, in my luggage, and she, you know, so that I can find it when I get checked into my hotel. And this year, the note said, if Barrett suggests something, think twice, and if Flictus suggests it, think three times before agreeing to it.
We both think it's a good idea. You just definitely come with us.
But no, don't hit your wagon to Barrett. I don't know. I mean, I know some people manage to travel in packs or have, you know, companions that will run around and do stuff together. But unless you're really in sync, that's going to end up kind of sucking for you.
Yeah, there's so much going on. It seems like no one ever sleep schedules, eating schedules, talk schedules. It's really hard to get things to align. And we've done a good job in years past, but this year was a very scattered kind of year.
When you meet new people, you know, at some point you run into people that are like, oh, yeah, tonight we're going to this party that's like in some other hotel somewhere that like, you know, some group is doing. So it's really easy to get pulled off of any schedule that you might have.
Yeah, there's in the evening there's any number of parties that are either just general parties for everybody or there's invite only parties where you're trying to, you know, scheme and connive and find a way to get an invite to this party because it's run by somebody super cool or whatever. And so, yeah, you know, you can keep yourself occupied. And I do like the idea that they stream the talks into the room. So, like, if you really don't want to go stand in line or deal with all that, you can just watch it from the TV in your room.
BetCon. There are many cons within cons.
Pure energy.
We went over on Monday and checked out because it's going to move to Caesars next year. And so we went over there on Monday and checked out Caesars just to get an idea what the space looked like. And I will say it's a really long building and we have, I think DEF CON has two floors and maybe like a pool promenade floor or something and something else. But those two floors, they're long. It's a long building. And the space is pretty huge, but they have all those like air walls where you can like sub-split like this huge ballroom floor into like a smaller center ballroom and like or two, and then like 20 around it and stuff. So I mean, you can slice it up all different ways. And the hallways are really wide, like wider than the ones at Rio.
Which is good because DEF CON is like a 7 gigabit backplane, and then you've got like these little tin base T hallways that everyone needs to go through, and that's just the pinch point of the entire router. Your entire LAN party goes
down. I will say
down.
That the scary thing about it is that if you're on the casino floor, I think there's at least one or two banks of elevators, and then we didn't go all the way to the end. I think maybe there's escalators on the far end. But when you're on the main casino floor, the way you get to the convention center is up escalators. And there's two going up and two going down, and they're...
they'll be burned out within about a year.
Yeah, and the convention floor is really, I think, probably on the third floor, is the second floor.
See, that's more
so it's a long escalator that goes, like,
So it's all the more reason to stay at the hotel that the con is at and pay the premium. I mean, it's more expensive. It's going to be more expensive.
Yeah, but the other two towers are not connected to the convention center. You would, if you're in the one tower is connected to it, but if you're in one of the other two towers, you still have to like walk around and either take the elevator or the escalator.
But if you don't stay in the hotel itself, you've got to walk that additional distance, then walk that extra distance. Too much walking. But at any rate, so yeah, it's going to be in a new hotel that should be interesting. They've also, it's strategically positioned near some other casinos, so you can stay at a nearby casino. And it was this year too. You know, you can stay at a nearby casino and still have a reasonable experience with that. But I prefer to stay in the actual convention hotel. But the bad thing was, you know, my room was on the 24th floor, and
which tower?
The Indigo Tower,
okay,
which is where the penthouse was, where they had
26th floor.
The 26th
which,
floor, they had the Sky Talks up there, and they had
all the DEF CON party stuff.
Yeah, so sometimes getting to my own room was not that easy.
Now, we did have, well, there were a couple, everything, I think everyone was pretty much behaved this year, it sounded like, but I went to a party call, well, it's fine, everyone kind of knows, the Whiskey Pirates party, which was up on the 26th floor, and this was Saturday night, and I got in there because there was some really cool old hardware, like they had, you know.
And something bad went down.
Something, it wasn't all that bad. I got the, you know, there was someone put up some hardware that maybe shouldn't have been in existence, and I think that because there were so many security people, not of DEF CON, but of the hotels, of like the Caesar staff, they were just kind of on standby waiting for something to happen. They may or may not have overreacted and may or may not have. Well, they did. They showed up with about 60 security guards. And I think that they just, as a matter of due course, also put in a call to the Las Vegas police, who may have just been kind of curious about what was going on and who may have just showed up just to come see what, you know, all the
well, what
know.
Was it?
Someone put up some, and you could do this with the cell phone, but someone brought in some wireless gear that matched what Caesars ran and changed the access point name to, like, Caesars, and then, you know, masked, I think, one of the SSIDs, you know, definitely an SSID, but maybe even a MAC address to make it look like it was Caesars, and then some of the hotel guests were connecting to it as well.
Wow.
So they didn't like that at all. So, and the issue was that a lot of people were probably doing that, but they were probably doing it, you know, with backpacks, they were probably moving around. They probably weren't, you know, staying in a suite high up in the floors at the same place all weekend long. So eventually people caught on to it, and they caught on to it by, I think, about 30 minutes, an hour after we left the suite. So we made
that
it out just
Sunday
in time. Saturday night.
Yeah, so the, whoever it was that they tagged for that, they were going to escort them off-site and blacklist them from ever coming back to any Caesars-owned
property anywhere,
ever
yeah,
again.
86M. But I think they're
and
trying
I
to...
I think that they talk them out of it.
They were kind of just press charges too. I think they're gonna, yeah, he was gonna have not a fun time. So yeah, don't do that, people. That's the main thing, is there's a lot of things, you know, this is just good, you know, if people hear what we're talking about and go explore it, there are a lot of things that are kind of broken, a lot of things don't quite work, but think about it, you know, the same way, just because you can doesn't mean you should. You know, yes, you can take a big can of spray paint and go to your neighbor's house and write all kinds of stuff all over their house. Yes, you have the ability to do that, but you definitely should not do that. And the same thing goes for, you know, getting on other networks or defacing other things or breaking other things or, you know, snooping on traffic. You know, you can go and probably look in your neighbor's window too, but that also is illegal in most places. Just as, you know, sniffing your neighbor's traffic is, you know, you just shouldn't do it. So that's the kind of stuff. We, a lot of us, go to see how to protect against those things. You can definitely go there to learn how to do those things. But again, a lot of these things you probably shouldn't do. You kind of need to be, you know, on the right side of things. That's one of the talks I saw too, is we've been putting up honeypots for a long time at my place of work, and that's just, you know, putting open like a weak system to allow hackers to kind of come in and do things. But the overall skill level of a lot of the hackers, it looks like, has gone down, and it looks like a lot of people are just kind of key mashing and running things they don't quite understand, and that's kind of the state of things. So there will be a backlash. So if you're one of those people that's just kind of out there saying like, ooh, I got this script, let's point it at this and see what happens, it has real-world ramifications and real-world things can happen to you. So, you know, be very careful with that. And it's best, if you're going to mess around with that, do it on a home network, you know, take it off the internet, explore, have fun. But, you know, it's like target practice. Go shoot targets. Don't go shoot people. That's,
and those and casinos deal with,
the more you know,
casinos deal with a lot of money.
Like
so
pizza,
they're paranoid.
Yeah, they are. Like Pete, you know, knowing's half the battle, you know, on that. It's very G.I. Joe. So, yeah, don't have people show up at your front doorstep. Just don't do things. But if you want to do things in a controlled environment at the next Geek Gathering, we'll bring some stuff up out and we'll set up a little network and we'll do some wireless stuff and some Bluetooth stuff and, you know, all the fun stuff you can't do on the wild.
All right. So we got about 11 minutes before the top of the hour. Do we have a short segment or?
Yeah, we have a short Apple segment we could do.
All right, let's do that.
Of course, I'd have to be more ready than to play the sound. But we'll get there as he. Let's see. Come on.
Wake up. Hello.
Top quality radio.
Yes, it's all about planning and execution that makes.
It's my fault. I surprised you. We were having this lengthy DEF CON talk, and now to Pete. Now to you, Pete. Take it away.
All right. Well, the phone event is in September. The rumors say September 7th. I don't have any phone rumors for this episode. I think I have better stuff, actually. There are some rumors now coming. More rumors are coming about MacBook Pros, which I think is, you know, to a certain extent is more interesting because they haven't updated in forever and a day. The biggest thing is, there's the rumors about USB Type-C. We've talked about that. An OLED touchscreen that replaces the function keys up across the top of the keyboard, and a thinner design. Those are all expected at this point. And then there's a new report from Bloomberg's well-sourced Mark Gurman that reiterates all those points while offering a couple of new details. There's been reports about touchscreen function keys that'll allow Apple and app developers to offer keyboard shortcuts that change based on what you're doing or what apps you're using. Bloomberg report just mentions it. It does, however, say that Apple plans to bring its Touch ID fingerprint sensors over to the Mac for the first time, and that, quote, Apple has tested versions of the upcoming laptops that integrate the scanner beside the new function key display. So tying those two things together. The upcoming macOS Sierra update already allows users to unlock their Macs with their Apple Watches, but a Touch ID option would offer easy authentication that didn't require separate hardware. Report also says that the laptops will be thinner, including slightly larger trackpads, and have smaller footprints than the current MacBook Pros, although they won't switch to a tapered design like the ones used for the MacBook or the MacBook Air. As expected, USB Type-C on tap. It's not clear whether those Type-C ports will also be Thunderbolt 3 ports or not. That's a big distinction as far as what kind of data and how much you can put through them. Finally, some models will allegedly offer a dedicated GPU option based on AMD's new Polaris architecture. Usually dedicated GPUs are in the 15-inch Pros, leaving other models to make do with whatever integrated GPU Intel has. Gurman suggests the laptops won't be unveiled at the iPhone event around September 7th. Apple has not talked about Mac hardware on stage since it introduced, the computer stuff, since it introduced the MacBook in March 2015. That was also the last time the 13-inch Pro was refreshed. The 15-inch MacBook Pro was refreshed in May of 2015, but they included the same processors as the 2014 models. Neither design has been updated since the original Retina models were introduced in 2012. Just for reference, it's the summer of 2016, so it seems to be getting overdue. And if Apple wanted a hint that maybe it would a redesign might add some value for them, apparently, Apple's notebook shipments, including 12-inch MacBook, MacBook Air, and MacBook Pro models, totaled an estimated 3.3 million in the June quarter of the 2016 calendar year, compared to 2.5 million in the March quarter, according to new data. The key thing, the 30% increase, was attributed to the release of the new 12-inch MacBook models in April. The ultra-thin notebooks were updated with faster Skylake processors, up to 25% faster graphics, faster PCIe-based flash storage, and an additional hour of battery life and faster memory. And people bought them. So might just be a hint that they should that maybe some more new releases might help boost them up farther. They did surpass Acer to become the fifth largest notebook vendor in the June quarter. They're behind Lenovo is number one, HP is number two, Dell's number three, and Asus is ahead of Apple. And then Acer, Samsung, and Toshiba come in after that. The other piece is that Apple's Apple's share going up was not typical compared to a lot of the other suppliers. So the business is slowing down a little bit, but clearly if Apple announces a new product, then there are people out there waiting to buy, and I think there's a pretty good pent-up demand right now, especially given that the 12-inch MacBook is kind of overpriced and has a kind of a limited audience compared to some of these other devices. So if that one got them a boost, then imagine what a new MacBook Pro would do. And that's all the Apple stuff that's the bite of the apple for tonight.
I'm glad Apple isn't releasing too many new things right now. It's just
you're a little thin.
A little thin on cash. But yeah, I mean, I'm still getting a lot of mileage out of my current Apple lineup. I will refresh my phone if the 7 comes out. What are we thinking on that? September, October, next year? In a time?
It's phone? They're coming up on the next phone event is in September.
Yeah, it's usually September.
Rumors are by the there's still the question of will it be an iPhone 7 or be an iPhone 6S. 6SE.
Yeah.
And some of that, but it sounds like that we're coming up on where the announcements have to go out. If the date is really going to be September 7th, like a lot of people are guessing, and the phones are going to be out around the 18th and orderable by the 18th and delivered by the end of the month, there's not a lot of time left.
All right. Well, we have successfully filled an hour of Technology Bites, so we're going to take a short break, take care of some station business, but we'll be right back after these PSAs. You're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
El patrocinio de Radio Escuchas es una respuesta práctica al problema de obtener y mantener mejores programas de radio. Un enfoque a anunciantes o a las audiencias masivas considera mediocridad de la radio comercial. Con esta mediocridad, el mejoramiento de la radio es una utopía. Cuando los radioescuchas apoyan la radio que ellos disfrutan, sus opciones son mejores. El patrocinio de radioescuchas les permite tomar el control de su radio, de las manos de compañías y las pone en manos de la comunidad. Pero mantener este tipo de radio requiere de usted. Su donación es nuestro apoyo para mantener KPFT en el aire como un recurso vital de la comunidad. Así que visite la página de internet www.kpft.org para convertirse en un miembro el día de hoy. Su donación es esencial para mantener viable el patrocinio de Radio Escuchas para las generaciones por venir. Esta es libre de comerciales, patrocinada por Radio Escuchas. Radio Pacífica, KPFT, Houston.
Many of us have great memories of KPFT. when we first heard it, what got us tuning in, and what we remember most. Inspired by the goodbye letter from former program director Ernesto Aguilar, we're collecting some of your favorite KPFT remembrances. Maybe it was that long-ago DJ you loved, music you could never forget, or something in your own life that KPFT helped you to change. We want to know. We'll choose some of the best ones to read on air. Just send your story to robin@kpft.org now.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. We now return to Technology Bites.
Wow.
Nobody said anything.
We thought it was Barrett time.
We just went back to the server room.
Always in the server room.
I had my Bose noise cancellation headphones on. I didn't hear anything.
So here's a statistic that I saw during DEF CON. So for the Cyber Grand Challenge, they had how many ever racks that were custom racks with silk screened fronts and sides with the names of the teams and the name of the system and all this stuff on it. But they were using water cooling. And so for the Cyber Grand Challenge, they were going through 180 gallons per minute of water cooling, and they were using 240 kilowatts power.
The leads on those racks were impressive. It looked very, very industrial and very heavy duty. And of course they were on false floors, just like you'd have in a regular, server kind of room. And it was impressive.
I heard the backups were destroyed by putting an Arduino in the climate control system for the...
Anyone can drop a Raspberry Pi in the... We can only do that once. So, yeah, a lot of the tapes melted down, I know. Yeah, Pete's completely right.
And the other ironic thing is I heard the winning computer was named Ender Wiggin, and it turned out that the bots weren't actually fighting each other, that they were hacking North Korea. Anyway...
Idiot.
Ender's Game. That might have been if they had taken an alternate version of when they did the movie. That might have been a better movie. Book was great. I still want another movie.
Well, for as much as DARPA spent, they could have had Harrison Ford kind of sleepwalk his way through the event.
All right. So
should we try buy or fry? I don't have tons of just an FYI.
Oh no.
I don't know, I figured there'd be a good bit of
DEF CON talk
discussion on the DEF talk.
I can talk about some more talks that I saw.
Yes, talking flicked.
So I already mentioned the guy Chris Rock from Australia.
Not to be confused with Chris Rock,
right?
From New Zealand. Different Chris Rock. Accent sound a lot
alike.
They don't even,
they don't like to be mistaken for each other. So last year, the same guy gave a talk, but it was like a turbo talk, and it probably should have been fleshed out into a full talk, but it was a really good talk. It was about how to kill somebody.
What?
Yeah, but not how to physically kill somebody.
More like in the Hackers movie.
But how? Yeah, but how to? Basically, he showcased vulnerabilities that I believe were released by him then and were still functional exploits of a number of government systems, where you could manipulate death records for somebody to pronounce them dead.
Like how to get a coroner certificate, how to get around certain things, how to.
The other thing was that he learned that. In some states, it's really, really easy to get a funeral director license. And as a funeral director, you can submit people to be deceased. And he was talking about the fact that there was no legal way in the system for a person to become undeceased.
Much like in real life, death is a one-way ticket.
So if you did this to somebody, everything was screwed up. Like they the legal system had no way to
bring them back.
Yeah, to like, they closed it out. It's, you don't come back to life.
Can't wait till Easter. Can't get in that way. There's one spot for
so,
that.
So, but he also learned that in certain states, funeral directors can also submit birth certificates. And so you could create these whole families of fake people that you could use as, you know, corporate leaders for like shell organizations and stuff. So anyway, that was his talk last year. So this year was about how to overthrow the government. And his talk basically started. And yeah, we were instructed to pay close attention because I was one of the people that was helping run the room he was in. And so, you know, part of our job is if it incites a riot or people become agitated, we're supposed to whisk the speaker away. or if they say certain things that are illegal to say, we're supposed to stop the talk. And he was going to talk about how to overthrow the government, which could be construed to get into territories that are not free speech. Or can be, you know, he could be immediately arrested.
Well, that's clear and present danger. It's like yelling fire in a crowded theater is what it's like.
Yeah,
to, yeah.
Yeah. So
you mean the things you can only say if you're like, oh, a presidential candidate, and say it's a joke?
Yeah, different theater. You know, a lot more money. One person
and the thing,
has
you
the
know,
attorneys.
As opposed to just some random Australian in Las Vegas. That's where it's really the critical. We got to pay attention, right?
So
g'day.
He started his speech by saying that. That this year, I guess it was the U.S. government listed the most imminent threats to the country, and ISIS came in first, and hackers were second, which upset him because for the last three prior years, hackers had been first on the list, and so he was like, "This is not acceptable." Like he's like, "Look at these people that got higher than us," and he showed this compilation video, basically ISIS being stupid. And he was like, this cannot be. Like, we have to get back on the top of the list next year. And so he was like, so I'm going to talk about how to overthrow a government. And he used Kuwait as an example and started talking about how to do it. And evidently, I guess he had actually been hired by Kuwait to do penetration testing for their country and had broken into banks, official country websites, all kinds of stuff. So he was basically showing his exploits that he had done to get into those systems and then connecting that with how to overthrow a government and talking, basically saying, you know, what you need to do is you need to get access to the banks, you need to get access to the government websites, you need to start shuffling money, you should frame somebody by transferring money into their account and then using the access you have to like the social media systems to point out the fact that this person got this large amount of money stolen from the government, put into their account, and then hire people to be protest mobs and then hire people to be security forces to beat up the protesters to create more riot amongst the real population. And then you need to have control of infrastructure so that you can have blackouts, you can turn off natural gas, electricity, water, stuff like that. Then he started going into, well, how would you do this? How would you disrupt electricity? So he started talking about, he put pictures up and said, this is what a large transformer station looks like. This is what you should attack because it'll knock out like a large, you know, area of electricity. And he just kind of described the parts, and he's like, this is what you want to take out. Somebody did this in California a year or two ago with a high-power rifle. There's other ways you can do it. You can do this, you can do this, whatever. And he's like, oh, by the way, just a second. This picture is not of a U.S. thing, so nobody needs to come up here and, you know, take me off the stage. This is actually from another country. But he's like, how would you find one of these? Well, conveniently enough, the government puts them all up on a website for you. So here's the URL. You just go here. It'll show you where all of them are. But then he started comparing it to like Arab Spring, you know, with Egypt and whatever, how many other four or five other countries where the Arab Spring happened. And he's like, pretty much every one of those countries followed this exact same process. So, you know, we as hackers can do all this without actually causing, you know, bloodshed, like, ourselves,
grassroots
anything
propaganda.
Like, yeah, it's just manipulation of the system electronically and with money to get what you want.
Plus, it's good for the economy, at least for the actors and electrical repair people.
So he showed this thing that he made. He's like, so how could you disrupt, if you didn't do that, how could you disrupt electricity? He's like, look at this. This is what electrical companies use to, like, clear tree lines for the electrical, major electrical lines. And it basically, you know how those, like, shrub trimmers look like the front of, like, a sawtooth shark or whatever those are? Looks like that, but it's, like, 50 feet long and hangs from a helicopter, and they're just kind of running along the sides, and it trims the trees. He was like, those are cool, but I don't own a helicopter, so what could I do?
Yet.
And so he made this frame and made it so that there were two overlapping circular blade saws, and then connected a cordless drill to it to and a chain to, like, run them. And then he was like, you know, this was about 7 or 8 pounds, but you could get it down to 3 or 4 pounds and it would still be functional. And so he set up, like, fake wire, you know, and hung it from a rope and, like, dropped it down and, like, cut through the cord. He's like, oh, there you go. Now you're just, you know, you can cut whatever power lines you want, like, remotely with some drones. Anyway, it was a very interesting talk.
Flick this on a watch list.
I see headlights in the security camera coming this way.
It was just, you know, it was interesting. Because he had a lot of, like, flow charts of, like, you know, areas that you would need to
he had a lot of criminally actionable material in his presentation.
And again, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
The one after him was really good too.
Were you assigned to a room? Or
yes,
to,
I was in track one the entire time. The one after him was a guy who the name of the talk was like, "What I learned from building a bionic hand from a coffee pot." Like, what?
Out of a Keurig, yeah.
Yeah. So the guy actually, I think. I recognized his name. I think he maybe writes for Wired Magazine or something. I'd seen his name before, but I couldn't remember where. Anyway, his talk was kind of like how he always loved MacGyver, and, like, he thinks it's cool to, like, repurpose things. And so he started his talk, and he's like, you know, the first thing I really kind of did is, you know, I have this big box of cables at home. A lot of people do, you know. Most of us tech people have, like, this big box of cables that we just really don't need anymore, you know, or they're just laying around. And he's like, you know, what am I going to do with all these cables? So I made an 8-foot bullwhip. And so he had this video, and he's like, you know, I made this 8-foot bullwhip with it. And for the centerpiece, I used probably like a VGA cable, something that was thicker and sturdier. And then he wrapped USB cables around it and braided them around it and put a leather strip on the end of it. And he was like, oh, and here's a video of me doing it, you know, to show you that it really worked. And the video started playing, and right about the time where he, like, spun it to whip it, it stopped. And he was like, let me just show you. And he got it out, and he, like, walked down to the side of the podium and was like, and it popped when he did it. So then he came back up, and he was like, oh, you know, and then I started doing this. So his next thing, again, this is maybe not something that you should do, but his next thing was he came up with, you know, there's all this, like, stuff in theater, in airports about how, you know, they check you and you have to take your shoes off now and all this stuff. And so he's like, my thing was, okay, I have three rules. I have a limited amount of cash. I can't bring anything in with me. It's only things I can get after I get through the scan, you know, get through the search and scan. And if somebody, like, stops me from trying to get something, like, I can't take it. And on that premise, he built, and he showed videos. It was, like, probably a 15-minute video of, like, 10 to 20 different objects that he made from stuff that he got on the other side of the security that he made into weapons. Mm-hmm. Many of which were bludgeoning weapons, or, like, he made something that would, like, with an umbrella that shot the umbrella pieces, like, through a watermelon or into a watermelon, a blowgun. He made stuff with aerosol cans that, like, blew up a suitcase.
Flick guns on multiple watch lists.
Well, the interesting thing...
He made bludgeoning weapons where he could, like... And he took... And it wasn't watermelon, he used coconuts. and I mean just like crush the coconuts with one hit.
What are we gonna say, Pete?
It, you know, the thing that this points out, though, one of the pieces to it is that, you know, hacking, there's white hat and there's black hat, and the techniques between them, there's not particularly a difference. It's in how you use it, because if you think about it, the you know, the overthrowing a government thing, well, that's a legit, that is a legitimate field of study. And frankly, somebody looking at it and looking at what they do, then first off, you can come up with countermeasures for it. And, you know, second of all, imagine if some of that kind of out of the box thinking had happened, oh, say in early September 2001, then a lot of this, then some things may have gone differently, you know. So someone taking that challenge, someone clever taking the challenge and going and showing what they did, on the one hand, obviously that knowledge is useful for bad purposes, but on the other hand, it's also useful to know the reality of what's there.
A lot of times, to be able to defend yourself, you have to understand what the other person might do and be able to defend against it.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. You can't write code and you can't design systems that, you know, that just blanket protect everything. You kind of have to, like Flick did say, you've got to know how to attack to be able to defend. And that's the big thing, is, you know, figuring out where the weaknesses are, so then other people can come in and figure out how that is. So really, thanks to this guy, we're not gonna be able to buy watermelons, coconuts, umbrellas, spray deodorant, aerosol deodorant.
He made an awesome, like, bludgeoning weapon from, I think it was it looked like it was probably, oh, what, he had clever names for all of these weapons that he made too. But it was like the head of the Statue of Liberty, so it had the Liberty spikes on it. Wow. And he put them on both. He put them on two ends of something on, attached to like a stick base, and so it was just, it was like a.
What was he using to adhere these things together?
Probably
bring a duct tape.
Probably duct tape.
Yeah,
I think you can buy tape in some of those stores. The general
plus the sharper
stores.
Image. I mean, I'm sure you can get like whatever kind of control devices you want. You probably can you buy drones with the sharper image and then take them on? No,
I don't know. No, he couldn't spend more than.
What was the price?
I don't remember if he. I don't say. I don't know if he said an exact price, but it was. I want to say it was like $20 or $30 or something. It was pretty low, so it was all like really low tech stuff. But then. So he also did a piece where he talked about he had this shed and he wanted to automate it and put electricity in it. And so he made these like homemade things where like when he opened the door, the light turned on automatically. He made a thing where when you open the door, it set off this like Saturn missile. It wasn't Saturn missile pack, but it was one of those packs that like shot fireworks at the door as an intrusion
was
device.
Was this more or less protecting your home?
Yeah.
This is the part I missed this one.
But it was just him. It was kind of being silly. But he was just showing what you can do with like stuff he had laying around that he found. But then his final one was he, for whatever reason, he was like, oh, these Keurigs have a lot of really interesting components in them. And at first he made one overheat. Like he just bypassed all the protection mechanisms to see if he could make it explode.
He didn't actually do this in the airport, right?
No, this stuff wasn't in the airport. It didn't explode. It just, the water just kept getting hotter and hotter, and kind of it released a bunch of steam at some point, but it didn't blow up. But anyway, then he was like, man, you know, people throw these things away because one component goes out, but this thing has a ton of stuff in it, all kinds of controllers and all kinds of stuff. And so he started thinking about what he could do with it. And I don't remember why he thought of this, but he was like, I'm going to make a bionic hand. Because I guess he had seen videos where people were starting to make bionic hands with 3D printers and stuff, and so it's really cheap. And so he's like, I'm going to take one of these. And so I forgot, he actually put a camera above his workshop, and the deal was, he said, I'm not going to use any complicated tools. Like, I'm going to use really simple, cheap tools that anybody has access to. Nothing expensive. And it took him, I think, about 200 hours of actual bench time. And he built this bionic hand, only used nothing except what was in the box from the Keurig, and it was really not like it looked like a professional bionic hand. It was I mean, since I was helping him, you know, I was up on the stage and like standing there like right beside it looking at it and stuff when he took it out of the carrying case and stuff. I mean, after the talk you could walk up and look at it as well, but anyway, that was a really cool talk as well.
The only problem was to use the hand after every time you grasped something, you had to put in a new pod that you had to buy separately.
And it had to be a genuine pod. You couldn't use an aftermarket pod. The hand would strangle you if you put in the wrong kind. All right, what's the next segment? We have Try, Buy, or Fry?
It's time for Try, Buy, or Fry.
In the geek world, we hear about new gadgets and gizmos every day. But can they stand a dip
in the snark tank?
Well, if you can't afford to wait until the next DEF CON to get on a watch list, this first thing gives you the quick shortcut to it. Or if you just want to send a message to the President of the United States, the White House today is releasing a Facebook Messenger bot that allows users to send notes to the president. This ought to just go great, right? Here's how it works. You open up the Messenger app on your phone or the chat feature in Facebook.com and type in the White House, all three words, as the name of the friend you want to message.
Then your name and your current location, and then they come and pick you up.
Then go ahead and lie down on the floor.
Alternatively, you can go to the White House's Facebook page and click the message button. Either way, a series of screens, which is the bot, will appear that let you fill out a message to the president. Press send, and the message goes straight to the Office of Presidential Correspondence, the White House department that collects and processes all communications from citizens. See, you know, it's a little-known secret, especially for you maybe non-U.S. Listeners, which I know we have some, especially for the podcast. You know, just like if you've ever had where your job was going to end, say in January of next year, maybe you end up sitting around not doing much. I got laid off once, and the last couple of months of it was pretty thin. Facebook didn't exist then, but now basically the president is apparently has a lot more free time to noodle around with Facebook, or at least his office does. So, you know, there's nothing earth-shattering about the bot. People have been sending messages to the president since the founding of the Republic, but this is another way to do it. So kind of clever, and it does let you send a message, you know. I wonder, you know, in the olden days, you could go to the White House and walk up to the front door and knock, and occasionally the president himself would answer. There's stories about that. And so clearly things change over time, but at least right now you can go and for free send a Facebook message to the president. So that might be worth a try, you know, and like, you know, maybe you want to think about what you say before you send it, but, you know, why not give it a shot? Maybe you'll get an answer. The sad part is though, it's like if you send a letter to the president and he sends a letter back to you, you get like fancy stationery and his signature and you can frame it. What do you do when you get a message back from the president on your phone? You know, it's like, what do you screenshot it and carry that around with you? It's kind of, you know, that part's a little bit weak. No, really, he did. The president, he messaged me back on Facebook. And it's like, yeah, how do you know it was him? Well, he asked me to send his picture. Anyways, it is a real thing, and you can send messages to the president. I don't know, you know, I don't know if this is one of those things that they'll decide if they're going to do or not going forward, if the next president will do it or if they'll choose or how that works. But if you ever thought, you know, you had a burning desire to get a message to the president of the United States, then this could be your moment. And then here's, this one's a kind of a handy tool. It's for iOS and Android. So that's pretty well covers people. Netflix has released an app for fast.com, which is its internet speed test website. Netflix members and non-members alike can test their internet connection speeds with accurate, reliable scores from just about any device. The Fast Speed Test app is available for free and requires iOS 7.0 or later. So, I mean, if you have a phone that runs, you're pretty well, at least on iOS. They do have a full technical write up that you can look at if you want to see how they engineered it. Like always, all the articles and stuff that we use as source material on the show tonight are linked at geekradio.com. They also show up on our Facebook page, so you could like message them to the president or whatever. You know, so you can find the links to get it and also to get more information about it if you're interested. You know, it's kind of nice with your devices because sometimes you got to wonder, you know, how it would help when you're out somewhere and your phone seems to be very slow. It would give you an idea of what kind of LTE you're getting in different places. So that was free. And here's another free one you know, there was the Frinkiac, where the Simpsons got an encyclopedic search engine. But, you know, since then, many TV fans have been wondering one thing. Where's the Futurama version? And it is now here. The creators of Frinkiac have launched Morbotron, a quote search tool that lets you dig through every season of Fry's Adventures, complete with 861,414 screenshots, to create meme-worthy pictures and animated GIFs. You can find every moment that Professor Farnsworth has good news, everyone! you can find when Morbo proclaims doom for the human race, or Bender invites someone to, you know, bite his backside. The new site also reflects an upgrade to the team's search code. Apparently, it can now pluck dialogue from videos in multiple aspect ratios. So that's good for titles like The Simpsons Movie, and it's more of a generic search platform than a Matt Groening specific engine. There's a show or two more that will get similar treatment. There's a show or two more that they're planning to do this in the future. So there's beyond the Frinkiac and the Morbotron. There will be more of these, but now you can make your cool Futurama memes. Now you don't have to just rely on the one with the squinty eyed Fry. You can make your own clever, creative ones, for free.
This is similar to the one that they did for The Simpsons, right?
Yeah, although apparently it's a bit more advanced. But yeah, it's the Morbotron
because it's Futurama.
Yes,
it has to be more advanced than The Simpsons.
So it's Morbotron.com. and when you go to it, it says, Morbotron has almost a million Futurama screen caps, so search now or I will destroy you, with Morbo's picture down at the bottom. So I think that's good news.
Bite my shiny metal search engine.
My shiny metal, yeah. Yeah, I can't do Bender. That his voice is too unique. It's hard to knock off the Bender voice.
Did y'all see the Bender badges?
Yes,
I did not.
Yeah, those were awesome.
We'll put up pictures on the Facebook page. We'll do a little gallery.
Somebody said they were Arduino based, but they sold them at a really reasonable price. I don't think they were making money on them.
Oh, I didn't know those were for sale. I just figured some group brought them out,
and they got bought up super fast.
Now, I did notice a lot of badges. Like, there was a car hacking badge that was actually for sale in the car hacking village, and it actually, once you assembled it, actually would speak CAN bus, and you could, you know, inject stuff in there, and it would, you know, give displays. It had a little, I think it might have been a TFT or maybe an OLED display on it. There were a lot of really cool hardware projects going around. Some you had to win, some you could buy. I managed getting a crypto badge, which I have not yet populated, but I think when populated, we will do some Google two-factor authentication stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
We shall see. I didn't solve that many challenges.
Well, you know, we're all used to carrying around, you know, 128 gigs in our, in our phones, and, you know, a terabyte, you know, get a whole terabyte in our laptops. But what are you going to do for at home where you really want to store some data? Seagate has recently announced their latest, their highest capacity solid state drive. Is a 32 terabyte drive. This is going to ship next year. It has just over twice the capacity of the previous one, which they shipped in March. Now, this doesn't match the capacity of Seagate's recently announced 60-terabyte drive, but it is denser, so it's more the size of a it's the size of a large internal hard drive for a desktop. And well, actually, the 32-terabyte fits in 2.5-inch slots, while the 60-terabyte fits in 3.5-inch slots. Samsung could have made a higher-capacity solid-state drive for 3.5-inch slots, but the company backs the smaller ones. So the SSD makers are packing more terabytes in drives because of storage demanded by applications like virtual reality, high-def video, machine learning, and analytics, or just people's, you know, insane Instagram habits, I think. Samsung's goal, they want to put 100 terabytes of storage into solid-state drives by 2020, and the company's drives are faster and more durable than competitors, they say, because of its advantage in manufacturing, according to Ryan Smith, senior SSD and storage product manager at Samsung, although he might be biased. The 32-terabyte one is the first one based on Samsung's fourth-generation V-NAND flash memory, which stacks 64 storage layers in one chip package, which is the highest density available in chips. Stacking storage layers is a way to add SSD capacity as devices get smaller and more power efficient. The layers are linked through a proprietary interconnect, and also they apparently manufacturing advances have made solid state drives more reliable and durable. You know, so I don't know. At some point, you know, you've got to wonder when is the point we reach where you can have one drive that would store all of the data that you possibly could produce as an individual person.
One drive
for a year or for your, you know, if you had that, you could become a being of pure energy. but yeah, so we're getting up to, you know, so that's the new thing is 32 terabyte solid state drives, you know. I mean, that'd be okay for my laptop, but I don't know what I'm going to do for, you know, my car or data storage for that stuff. But, you know, it starts getting it, you know, I just wonder when is the point where you would have so much where you couldn't generate enough data to fill the device without having, you know, like teams or millions of people contributing content to fill the thing. And you know, maybe that's what we'll see in the future. You know, back in the day, there was the whole like a phone booth stuffing contests. And in the future, it'll be like, hey man, I got a petabyte drive and I'm trying to fill it up. But, and then finally in that future with all that data, maybe you'd be having Soylent, but Soylent has something new. And this is to help you deal with your, you know, you wake up in the morning and maybe you just don't want more Soylent. They have a new thing that's called Coffeeest, I guess, C-O-F-F-I-E-S-T, Coffeeest. They say that it's made to combine coffee and breakfast in a bottle. It's the latest in its line of meal in a bottle products. Like regular Soylent, it's meant to give you a broad nutritional base, basically taking all those parts of the complete breakfast from a cereal commercial and cramming them into a 400 kilocalorie bottle. A bottle of Coffeeest also has 150 milligrams of caffeine, which isn't all that much. That's a little more than a small cup of diner coffee, but less than half what you'd get from a grande pike at Starbucks. And for good measure, they also include 75 milligrams of L-theanine, or theanine, a supposedly more even-keeled energy supplement that some people swear by, even though the scientific evidence is not overwhelming. Basically, it's a 400-calorie meal for about $3.10 a bottle. I don't know what... here's what they say. So I guess we'll have to see if we can get, maybe we can get Lee to try it out and report on it for us. It says, and this is from Wired, altogether it's a 400 calorie meal for about $3.10 a bottle. We haven't tried it ourselves, but given what we know about Soylent and coffee, Coffeeest probably tastes like caffeinated Cheerios. And let's be honest here, you're going to fart a lot the first few times you try it. So if that sounds like the best substitute for breakfast that you could come up with, then you might want to try this. So so Soylent, it goes with the whole Futurama thing. I'm sure you can go to the Morbitron and find a great quote that you can use to either market Soylent, show what a dark dystopia it will be a part of, or I don't know, some other third thing that I can't think of.
I was actually talking to somebody at DEF CON that has used Soylent for some periods of time as a meal substitute and stuff, and they were saying that the Soylent 2.0 formula is actually pretty good, because I think what we had was like 1.5.
But they bought it a while ago.
Yeah, which I thought was okay, but everybody said was kind of gritty, and I've heard that he was saying that the 2.0 formula is not gritty like that. It probably still tastes kind of similar.
That's because the 2.0 Soylent is people. So that's all the try, buy, or fry this week. We got plenty of free stuff.
It's funny how Fry is the name of the guy from Futurama, too. So,
but I'm
try, buy, or fry. Try, buy, or.
Try Morbo or Fry.
Try, buy, or Professor Farnsworth.
Yes. Yes. So, all right.
So as we plunge,
I guess maybe we need to find some Soylent, some coffee-est for the next Geek Gathering, for the September one. The near Labor Day one, I'm guessing. Usually it's the Friday before Labor Day or the Friday immediately after. It's the Friday before this time. September 2nd, if you're keeping track at home.
Huh. There you go. Did you have something you wanted to add to that, Flicked?
No, I was going to talk about another talk that was in my track. So there was a guy who, was it one guy or two? I think it was just one. No, it was two guys. They actually did they studied antivirus on cell phones, Android antivirus, and they were looking for exploits in it. And they tried looking at six, I think, was how many they had. And they found found at least two exploits in every one of them. One of them had four. But it was pretty crazy because, right, these are like pieces of software that you install to protect your phone, right? And instead, every one of them provided an attack vector onto your phone.
Wow.
Oh.
So that was pretty awesome.
Now, did the people that found the backdoor, I guess the exploit with the, I guess what was it, like the universal backdoor Microsoft security cert, was that at DEF CON or was that parallel to DEF CON?
I don't know.
Have you seen this? Well, some people put out a paper. They cracked when Microsoft OS's boot up, I think it's like Windows. I think it might just be Windows 10, but when it boots up, there's a short amount of time when it actually communicates with those servers using like a standard, master SSL cert for Microsoft. And they were able to actually capture that and then replay that and be able to, do whatever you want to
sign,
on it.
Sign stuff?
Yeah, sign. It was pretty neat because on, like, one of the sections of the paper said it was actually addressed to the FBI. And so, like, hey, this is why key escrow is bad. This is why backdoors are bad. This is why you shouldn't do this, because if we can do this to Microsoft, chances are someone's probably going to do it to the government implementation. And that stuff isn't quickly patched like it would be in the Microsoft world. So, yay. Lots of stuff is kind of weak sauce is the big takeaway from DEF CON, I think.
That one I did not. If it was in the track I was helping run, I do not remember it. However, there was a Turbo Talk, like a 20-minute one, that was by a guy who wrote about 20 lines of Python that would automatically search all of Twitter, and if there was, and he had, it was very vague on what his search terms were. But if there was something that said something about retweeting to win or a contest or whatever, he created an account and the Python code would just retweet to win. And over He said that over a period of 9 months, this was like a year and a half or 2 years ago when he actually did it, over a period of 9 months, on average, he won 4 contests every day. And he said the most expensive thing he won was a $4,000 trip or $4,000 vacation to Fashion Week in New York. He said he didn't claim that one, though, because he didn't want to pay taxes on it. And it didn't include, like, airfare or bus fare or anything. And so he would have had to get there on his own. But he didn't care about fashion so much, and so he didn't want to pay taxes on the $4,000. But he won all kinds of stuff. And that was a cool talk, too.
Yeah, it just sounded, looks like, it sounds like, so it's two hackers that released the Microsoft stuff. It was Maya123 and Slipstream, and they found it. It's actually the cryptographic key protecting a feature called Secure Boot, ironically enough, is what they broke. So, yeah, that's kind of a bad idea. If you search for Secure Boot and Maya123, I bet you'll find it, if people are interested.
All right.
Servers are still running hot, it sounds like.
Oh, sounds all right.
That's good. Okay.
Not too bad.
Should go to water cooling like DARPA. So you want to have a couple mill around?
I turned the gain down on my mic, so maybe that helped.
No, I just like the idea that we've got a server room behind us.
Mm-hmm. It makes it more realistic.
I'm not complaining. Yeah, it's a little bit more realistic. It's a little bit more like my day-to-day existence.
But not nearly as cold.
No, it's still kind of warm in here. A little muggy.
So... another talk that was cool was these guys who I think they'd said that it's been about 8 or 9 months there, and I don't remember if they wrote this or if they just use it, but there's a program called PowerView that you can run against Windows domains to figure out what groups have access to escalated privileges, users, etc. But they wrote a kind of a wrapper that sits on top of it and does some stuff and feeds it into it called Bloodhound that actually provides visualization of all the information that PowerView collects, as well as I think some other stuff. So if you just have an account like in the domain, you can run this and it will gather all the information it can out of AD and every system it can get to, and will provide visualizations that you can search, click on things, and it'll basically show you paths. Like you can say, let's say I have access to this user account, or I have access to this system. How can I get domain admin on that domain? And it will show you like all the pathing. Like, I mean, and it can go like hops through multiple domains, through nested groups, all kinds of stuff.
Closed doors.
To figure out how to get there. So that was pretty cool.
I think we just locked the firewall down. Yeah. We're server's hardening down. The system. Server's down. Oh, the website's down.
The website's down.
The Dark Army is attacking the backups in China.
I cast magic missile.
Someone called the White Rose.
I'll put up my sleeve.
I know you've been out of town, but have you been... Is everybody current on Mr. Robot? Or
no.
I am.
I am not current. I have not really sat down and slugged through it. Got off to a slow start, and I was a little discouraged, so...
It's getting pretty dark, I guess. Yeah. I will just say that.
Dark good fun or dark good bad?
The ending
or...
of this last episode was, yeah, pretty dark. I thought it was slow... I thought it was slow, and I was like, yeah, this is getting kind of slow. And then the ending was like, oh, crap.
Is it technical again, or is it still kind of, is it more, not to say soap opera-y, but is it, have they brought back the technical
This
shots?
Last episode,
there's a technical aspect
technical.
To it, but it's more real-world darkness, I would think.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I would say the beginning of this last episode, there was some pretty technical stuff going on, but the maybe like this... second and thirds, like in thirds, right? Maybe, or fourths. Like the first quarter of the show was maybe some technical stuff, more technical, kind of like about being a hacker and kind of that culture and stuff. And then, but then it slipped into just, yeah, kind of slow and then very dark at the end.
And they do a very good job of kind of, they use your expectations about some of the characters in a way that makes it darker when it comes, I guess. This is a totally non-spoilery way to say, I believe. It's one of those where when you see it, you'll know it, but it doesn't give you any kind of, give you anything on, it's not giving you anything where you're going to watch it and go, oh, now I see it coming. Kind of thing.
They're behind you. Watch out.
We hear it coming.
They're in the house.
Yes. So someday I'll have a soundproof office, but not yet.
So a talk that I.
How about a sign that just says private?
So a talk that I didn't really see so much of, but maybe like the beginning and the ending of it, was one where a guy had got hold of a used ATM, like had bought one. And hacked on it, and I forgot that guy's name that last year, or 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah. Barnaby Jack.
Oh, yeah, Barnaby
who is
Jack.
Now no longer with us. Yeah, sadly.
Where he made an ATM like spit out money,
mm-hmm. Jackpotting it.
This guy basically did the same thing, and at the end of his talk, like he was like, "Okay, now I'm going to run it, and should start seeing like random numbers of bills starting to spit out, you know, every 10-15 seconds." And it did. But he was using fake $100 bills in it. Mm-hmm. And then he was like giving them to people. He did it at Black Hat also. But he was giving out the money, and it was the $100 bills that are used for motion pictures for movies. And I didn't realize like they look really real. Like he was giving them out. And
were they about as close as you could get without, you know, the treasury getting a little upset?
Yeah, I mean, like on the back across the top where it says Federal Bureau or whatever it says. It said like motion picture use only, but it was in the same font and kind of went with it. And on the front, it was almost impossible to tell, like Ben Franklin, instead of his lips being normal, they were kind of pursed.
That's too close.
It was pretty close.
Yeah, that would cross some lines.
I didn't get one. He was handing it out.
Because otherwise he'd be on a third watch list.
Hey!
Counterfeiter.
Secret Service.
Now, speaking of that.
Candygram.
One guy that was supposed to give a talk in our track was about how to take control of the air traffic control system or something
that.
That
was kind of, yeah.
Third watch list coming up.
He didn't show.
Yeah. Do you think that was because the talk was too? A lot of times when they announce what they're going to do in the talks, it seems like those are the cool talks.
Well, last year a guy was supposed to talk about how he could plug in an airplane and manipulate the airplane while it was flying. And my understanding was he got talked to and he didn't show and never released his stuff.
So was that the Tokyo Drift that I've been hearing about? Is that what that is? Tokyo drifting the airplane?
So when he said he could make it crab walk, I think is what he said.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah.
Or something like that. Anyway, this guy, all we knew was he hasn't checked in. He didn't show up. We don't know. We don't know what happened. They substituted some other people at the last minute who actually gave a good talk. It was, I think they were French. I think it was a guy and a girl. They gave a talk about... in Chinese casinos, like, are basically gambling, but they bought these devices that would tell, the device would say out loud, or you could get a little earplug, and it would tell you what the next cards are that are going to be played, and it could tell you, like, how many, you would tell it how many players are playing, and then it would, like, tell you who had the winning hand and who was going
to
come in second.
How to bet and how to do all.
It was with marked cards.
Oh, wow.
But... yeah, that was a really interesting talk. Because, I mean, they had IR and the people who sold it out of China or whatever had managed to fit, like, IR cameras and stuff into the, like, key fobs. Like, the electronic key fobs that have the keys that, like, flip out. That and into a smartphone. That's a functional smartphone that has apps on it. And one of the apps is the games app, which actually manipulates the IR and stuff to tell you what card's coming up next and what player has what cards.
So I'm always extremely surprised that they let us in there with laptops and, you know, mobile phones and just everything like that, because there's a lot of stuff. Along those lines, the two talks that I did make it to, one of them was kind of cool. It was and this was the airplane thing came up. The guy was, you know, we've been doing this for a while. You can encode data on mag stripes, you know, and those could be hotel key cards. They could be, you know, three tracks, you know, for instance, for credit cards. You know, that's how carders do it. You can buy, you know, like for 15, 20, who knows? We're not talking prices, but for very, very cheap, you can get a card reader slash card encoder, card key card blanks, and do all this stuff. So everyone's always talking about, you know, like, let's go clone, you know, a hotel key card, or let's go do this. He, because these, a lot of them, the drivers show up as HID or like human input devices, he was actually putting in commands and escape sequences and loading more or less payloads on these different key cards, where when you swipe the key card, a lot of the things would be interpreted differently. So you can send, for instance, an alt sequence and get like an escape sequence with something else, or put a special word in there. Or a lot of times, you know, if it was going to check and say like, hey, is this, and this is really simple, but hey, is this ID in this table? And you know, kind of what the back end query looks like, you can do a very easy like drop tables or, you know, something more or less SQL injection through key card blanks. Now, very, very short, because you don't have a lot of characters, you're kind of limited, but he was getting them just right. And then on the flip side of that, the next talk I went to, which is a friend of the show, Ricky, he more or less said, look, don't worry about the key cards. And this was with getting into like lock systems and things like that. So like there's a lot of smart locks, whether they're on prisons or on schools or on corporate buildings, or maybe you've got a smart home, you know, where you can pop your locks from different places. But the idea is you don't go and attack the, you know, the mag reader, you don't go to attack the lock, you don't attack any of that. You actually just go in and start talking to the controller, because most of these communicate to a back-end database that communicates something else. And what he was able to do was actually, you know, intercept messages off the network. So if there was, for instance, like a message that said, hey, someone's breaking in here, he could actually this draws back to the movie Sneakers, kind of, he could suppress that message so it never sees it. He could unlock doors. He could actually put all the doors in an unlock state, so no matter what that control program said, like unlock the door, or lock the door, just nothing would. So that's kind of interesting, too. So it's, you know, it's I guess the biggest, the scariest thing for me is all the Internet of Things devices out there, they're all making the same mistakes that were present, you know, in the late 90s. So it's kind of like everything new is old again.
So it is.
So it is.
So I was going to say, so the airplane talk guy, right, we didn't know what happened. Mm. Well, just, was it today? Yesterday. I think it was yesterday. The guy who was actually running the track I was in posted something on a list. It was like, okay, so now I think
Can he not fly?
I know we know what happened. And then I looked, Google searched some more about it and got some more information. And yeah, I think he didn't show up because he was incarcerated.
Ooh.
Not related to his talk.
Oh, okay. Not related to the talk. That's a little different. The joke was in the Magstripe reader talk with someone asking, like, hey, you know, because he said, like, once you start seeing Magstripe readers, you know, you can't unsee Magstripe readers. Everywhere you look, there's a reader. You want to, like, see what it does. You know, hey, there's a Magstripe reader on that. I wonder what that does. And someone asked him, like, hey, you know those, you know, in the back of the seat backs, you know, like, where you can, like, pay to get internet or pay for movies. What have you looked at those? And he's like, no. I think everyone, and rightly so, don't mess with things on planes. I think everyone is sufficiently scared of messing with things on planes, or even talking about messing with things on planes, to do that. So that's something that no one's touching. And
hackers on an MFN plane.
Get these hackers off my plane. Get these exploits off my plane. I think we're on four lists at this point. We're just kind of racking up the lists.
We may or may not be allowed to leave the building without being interrogated, thanks to Flicted.
Can someone see if there's some Caesar security staff immediately outside the KPFT exit? Well, from DEF CON, they could have.
They're
going to
come from the
here.
Future?
I'm just talking about DEF CON.
They're just DEF CON.
They're
going to
come
just
from
DEF
the future.
That's the only people we should be irritating at this point.
Well, I just want to say that our leader, Ernesto, should be held fully responsible.
Oh, no, he's gone under the directives of the program management.
Yeah, and that's the main thing, too, is that when I mentioned earlier that all the Caesars hotel staff showed up, it's like where we stayed, Bally's and Paris, they're all operated underneath the Caesars banner. So they're all interrelated.
Oh, okay.
So that was the interesting thing. So it's not like, so if you think of all these Vegas hotels like states, let's say, like, you know, like the Paris is the state of Paris and Valleys is its own state. More or less, the security people, from my understanding, that showed up were like the federal security. Yeah, they float, more or less. It's like the United States of security people for Caesars. The Centurions,
they
I suppose.
Because they own a lot.
They own a lot of stuff, so that's what they did. They scrambled.
They own Caesars, Paris, Bally's, Flamingo, Link, Rio.
Oh, the Rio, too. So they pretty much scrambled their entire force and had them show up. I was like, how do you get 60 people? And it's like, because they were like the federal agents of the Caesars, whatever. I really wish I had stuck around. I wonder if they had like swords and helmets. And oh, man, I think we missed the whole Sparta showdown. Next year.
I am Sparta.
This is Sparta. This is DEF CON. I should probably see that movie before making references about the 300 thing. After Mr. Robot.
Get right on that.
I know.
All right, do we have a final segment? Do we have a final segment for this evening?
Let's see. We do have some. There's some weird science that we could get into in. Let's see. Once I have the article lined up and play the thing, but they're both kind of cool. Let's see. Did they come out? Yes. And so here it is.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
science. So here's one that's kind of different that we've learned about from analyzing DNA. Apparently, you know, everybody knows what the whole thing about how did humans come to America, and they must have come across the ice-covered Arctic, you know, across the ice bridge to the United States. Well, there is a new study that says that they could not have done this the way the textbooks say. Quote, if you look at a textbook about the earliest people of the Americas, you see an arrow going from Siberia into Alaska and through this interior ice-free corridor, says study co-author S.K. Villerslev, an evolutionary geneticist at the University of Copenhagen. This whole schoolbook example of how the Americas were populated seems to fall apart. By analyzing DNA embedded inside ancient lake beds, Villerslev and colleagues reconstructed the ecological history of a segment of that passage. Though it was ice-free during the earliest human migrations, dating back about 14,700 years, so it was ice-free for thousands of years, the passage contained too little vegetation and wildlife to feed the travelers. The researchers conclude that in the August 10th edition of Nature. The findings, which have drawn skepticism from other experts who say the researchers overlooked other evidence, support the idea that the first Americans instead traveled down the coast. When the first humans trekked across the Bering Strait land bridge from Siberia, they encountered a land jam-packed with towering glaciers. Some groups, such as the forerunners of the Clovis people, may have somehow navigated this icy realm as early as around 20,000 years ago. Geologic evidence suggests that an opening appeared between two retreating ice sheets around 15,000 to 14,000 years ago. Of course, it gets closer. That's why the numbers get smaller, making an inland journey much easier. So that was what was assumed, but apparently, according to this research, there wasn't enough... there weren't enough plants and animals alive to support people. So now, you know, yet another thing that you used to know that might not be correct. We'll see if, you know, obviously this one's going to get tested, but it's an interesting alternate.
That's it.
We got to go.
Yep, you're done.
Awesome.
So you're done.
Still have a story left that you can go read off the website.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Pure Energy.
The Woodlands Children's Museum invites you and your child to celebrate going back to school with one last big summertime bash. The annual Shake Your Summer Sillies Out event takes place Friday, August 19th. Come anytime between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. to join in on the fun. We've got live entertainment, art, music, dance, contests, and more to make it an exciting day, all designed for children under 7. For more details, visit woodlandschildrensmuseum.org. That's woodlandschildrensmuseum.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston. KPFT invites you to come out to the Electro Love Fest on Saturday, September 24th from noon to 1 a.m. The show happens at Billy's Hall, located at 4070 Wells Drive, Pearland, Texas, 77584. Featured performers include Tres Equis, Gravel Tooth, Nameless Horses, Heartburn, Alive One, and more. Electro Love Fest benefits KPFT. Tickets are available now at electrolove2016.bpt.me. Again, that's Saturday, September 24th. Check kpft.org or the Facebook event page for updates. See you there. This is KPFT Houston.